Tonight, damage control. The president's lawyer takes responsibility for a controversial Trump tweet about why he fired Michael Flynn, prompting a warning from a leading Republican senator. Maestro accused the allegation of sexual abuse against one of the world's top conductors by a man who says it started when he was a teen and went on for years. Land battle. Thousands protest as President Trump nears a decision that critics say could threaten some of America's greatest monuments. Cashing out in this season of shopping, more American consumers and businesses give up paper money, but some say it's unfair. And Museum of Trash. He picked it up for decades on his garbage run and turned it into a treasure trove that you've got to see.
This is NBC Nightly News with Kate Snow.
Good evening. All weekend long, President Trump has been weighing in on Friday's big news, his former national security adviser, Michael Flynn, pleading guilty to lying to the FBI. The president insists he is not worried about what Flynn might tell investigators. But on Saturday, a tweet from the president's account about why he fired Flynn was scrutinized. And today, a top Republican warned the president to be more careful. Kristen Welker starts us off from the White House.
Tonight, damage control. The president's outside counsel, John Dowd, saying he dictated this tweet to an aide sent from the president's Twitter account Saturday. I had to fire General Flynn because he lied to the vice president and the FBI. The tweet sparked an uproar because it implied the president knew his former national security adviser, Michael Flynn, lied to the FBI and then asked FBI Director James Comey to go easy on Flynn. Dowd telling NBC News he's responsible and that the president did not know Flynn had lied to the FBI when he fired him. Dowd also adding, I'm out of the tweeting business. I did not mean to break news. News, some say, if true, raises questions about a possible obstruction of justice charge against the president. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham warning.
You tweet and comment regarding ongoing criminal investigations at your own peril. I'd be careful if I were you, Mr. President. I'd watch this.
For his part, the president lashed out today, insisting, I never asked Comey to stop investigating Flynn. Just more fake news covering another Comey lie. But former FBI Director Comey testified to Congress this summer.
Understood him to be saying that what he wanted me to do was drop any investigation connected to Flynn's account of his conversations with the Russians.
Tonight, the top Democrat on the Senate Intelligence Committee.
I believe FBI Director Comey. I think he was very credible in his testimony and his private meetings with us.
On Friday, Flynn pled guilty to lying to the FBI about his interactions with the Russian ambassador and is now cooperating with special counsel Robert Mueller.
What has been shown is no collusion, no collusion. There's been absolutely no collusion, so we're very happy. We'll see what happens.
At least three other former campaign associates have either been indicted or pled guilty in the Mueller investigation. Top Democrat Dianne Feinstein on Meet the Press says the congressional investigations are also ramping up.
Now, I think what we're beginning to see is the putting together of a case of obstruction of justice.
Some critics suggest as the investigations grind on, they may be taking a toll.
As this investigation has moved closer to the Oval Office, it has driven increasingly erratic behavior by the President of the United States.
After revelations an FBI officer was removed from the Russia probe for sending anti-Trump text messages, the president tweeted today that the FBI is in tatters. Former FBI Director James Comey firing back, quoting from his summer testimony before Congress, tweeting, the FBI is honest, the FBI is strong, and the FBI is and always will be independent. Kate?
Kristen, I want to go back to that original tweet yesterday that set so much off. Do we know if the president actually signed off on that before it was sent from his account?
Well, the president's attorney, John Dowd, hasn't said whether the president signed off on the tweet in question. But generally, according to one White House official, the president and his social media director, Dan Scavino, are for the most part the only ones who tweet from the president's account. Scavino almost always gets approval from the president before posting. The White House has consistently said the tweets speak for themselves and should be considered official statements. Kate.
Kristen Welker at the White House. Kristen, thank you. A bombshell in the world of classical music tonight. Allegations of sexual misconduct against a superstar conductor who has spent most of his career with New York's Metropolitan Opera. Morgan Radford has those details.
He is one of the world's most famous conductors. 74-year-old James Levine, who led New York's iconic Metropolitan Opera for more than four decades, now accused of sexual misconduct. On Saturday, the country's largest opera house announced it is investigating details from a 2016 Illinois police report revealing allegations that Levine abused a teenaged boy. In an anonymous interview with the New York Times, Levine's accuser says the abuse began in 1985 at a summer music festival and continued for years.
Was the Metropolitan Opera invested in protecting him? That is the question that is now being investigated. They have known about these allegations for at least a year and are only investigating them now that they've gone public.
In a statement to NBC News, the Met's general manager said they found out about the allegations last year. Mr. Levine said that the charges were completely false, and we relied upon the further investigation of the police. We need to determine if these charges are true, and if they are, take appropriate action. The Met's former press representative, Johanna Fiedler, acknowledging in a book published in 2001 that rumors of sexual abuse by Levine circulated since the 1970s, claims he denied after the book came out. His, the first high-profile misconduct claim to rock the classical music scene, since a wave of accusations has toppled other famous faces. For media mogul Harvey Weinstein to CBS's Charlie Rose and NBC's Matt Lauer.
The traditionalism of the field feeds into a culture of wanting to keep things quiet or not coming forward that is not conducive to airing this kind of thing.
Now, a moment of reflection and reckoning. Morgan Radford, NBC News, New York.
A 17-year-old girl who went missing with a high school soccer coach last week is back home in Florida tonight, and the man is under arrest, facing a court appearance tomorrow. Maya Rodriguez has that story.
Back home after a week on the run, 17-year-old Caitlin Frisina and her parents returning to Florida after the teenager disappeared last Saturday night with 27-year-old Ryan Rodriguez, who had been a soccer coach at her school. The family not answering questions, but in a statement saying they were tired and worn out. In Syracuse, New York, Friday, a state trooper spotted Caitlin and Rodriguez, taking the former soccer coach into custody. Yesterday, the family had an emotional reunion.
We are so thankful to have her back.
It's been difficult. I'm glad to have my daughter back where I know I can protect her and keep her safe, as a father always wants to do.
Newly released court documents reveal when Caitlin's family realized she was missing, a friend of hers told Caitlin's mom the teen had been in a relationship with a 27-year-old. That Caitlin said Rodriguez wanted to leave the country. The friend adding Caitlin said she was scared and didn't know what to do. Caitlin's father later using her phone to find explicit Snapchat messages between her and Rodriguez. The document also citing a school resource officer's August investigation into a rumor that the two were in a relationship. The officer at the time concluding it was not true.
Our work does not stop. There's a lot of investigative things that will still continue on.
Ryan Rodriguez was arrested and charged as a fugitive of justice in New York.
Do you have any comments?
Facing an additional felony charge of interference with child custody in Florida. A court date is set for Monday, as Caitlin returns to the life she left behind. Maya Rodriguez, NBC News.
A reported corporate tie-up tonight between two giants in healthcare. CVS, the drugstore chain, will buy Aetna, the health insurance company, for about $69 billion. The mega deal is one of the biggest of 2017. It comes as rumors swirl about Amazon's potential entry into the pharmacy business. It is decision time in a land battle that could result in huge pieces of federal land losing their protected status. This fight is centered right now in Utah, and President Trump travels there tomorrow. Steve Patterson has the latest.
In Utah, a show of force. This weekend, thousands descended on the state capitol, protesting an expected announcement from President Trump in Salt Lake City Monday to dramatically shrink the federally protected lands of two national monuments.
This is truly a monumental mistake.
This comes just months after President Trump ordered a review of 27 national monuments approved over the last two decades, something the president has characterized as a massive federal land grab. Last month, a staffer for Utah Senator Orrin Hatch said they expect the administration will shrink the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument by about half, while cutting the Bear's Ears National Monument by more than 80%. The plans have united opposition groups, from environmentalists to Native American tribes who consider the land sacred, stoking fears the move could open coal-rich areas like the Kiperowitz Plateau and Grand Staircase Escalante to mining.
America's public lands, they belong to everyone. By lifting those protections, those lands, and all of their treasures within them, the natural wonders and sacred sites, they will now be open to private gain.
But the Monument designation limits mining, timber cutting, and activities like off-roading, restrictions some oppose.
I'm just so happy with Trump's decision.
Meanwhile, in southern Utah, hundreds rallied in support of the reductions.
It's about control and overreach of the federal government. We want that access to remain open and people be able to enjoy the scenery and the area like they do right now.
With battle lines drawn, the administration is sure to face challenges in court, a fight now brewing for the heart of Utah's beauty. Steve Patterson, NBC News.
The president's national security advisor, H.R. McMaster, weighed in this weekend on North Korea's nuclear threat, saying there isn't much time left to resolve the problem.
The greatest immediate threat to the United States and to the world is the threat posed by the rogue regime in North Korea and his continued efforts to develop a long-range nuclear capability.
McMaster said there are ways of addressing the issue short of armed conflict, but he said we're in a race to figure out a solution as North Korea continues to develop its nuclear capability. This week, President Trump may announce a new U.S. policy regarding Jerusalem, and that has many in the Middle East on edge. President Trump may follow through on his promise to move the U.S. embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem or declare Jerusalem the capital of Israel. NBC's Ron Allen is there tonight.
Today on a hilltop overlooking Jerusalem, Jewish worshipers chanting daily prayers. A community hoping President Trump will officially recognize the holy city as the capital of Israel and finally move the U.S. embassy here.
In your mind, this is the capital of Israel, period?
Not in my mind. It is the capital of Israel, period, historically, spiritually.
Josh Wander is an activist urging President Trump to reverse decades of U.S. policy and defy the world.
This is the center of our world. It has always been and it always will be.
But Jerusalem is home to sites that are also sacred to Muslims and Christians, and Palestinians demand a part of Jerusalem should be the capital of their future state. A 1995 U.S. law calls for the U.S. Embassy in Tel Aviv to move to Jerusalem. But every U.S. president since then has exercised a provision every 6 months that stops the relocation. This week, Mr. Trump expected to announce whether he'll defer once again on a promise he made in his campaign.
We will move the American embassy to the eternal capital of the Jewish people, Jerusalem.
Today, Jared Kushner, who's leading the administration's peace effort, said his father-in-law still has not decided what he'll do.
He's still looking at a lot of different facts, and that when he makes his decision, he'll be the one to want to tell you, not me.
Palestinian leader Mustafa Barghouti warns any decision by Mr. Trump to move the embassy or recognize Jerusalem would destroy any hopes for peace and could even ignite violence.
I hope he would understand, or somebody would tell him, this is so reckless, so dangerous, so bad for the United States and its future, that he would retreat from doing such a thing.
Tonight, U.S. officials confirmed that U.S. diplomatic posts in the region have been warned about possible unrest in the days ahead as an unpredictable president makes up his mind. Ron Allen, NBC News, Jerusalem.
An update tonight on that South Carolina State basketball player who we told you about last night. He collapsed during a break in a game yesterday. Ty Solomon had to be revived by EMS workers, was taken off the court on a stretcher. Well, last night he posted this picture on Facebook thanking the team that revived him using CPR, saying they literally saved his life. Nice to see him looking well. Still ahead tonight, going cash-free. Consumers and businesses are increasingly doing away with paper money. But is that a good thing? Also, why you might want to go out and take a look at the moon tonight after you watch this program, of course. We're back with a story about money and how you spend it, which for an increasing number of us means carrying around plastic or using a smartphone app, not using cash. Non-cash payments are soaring. So are businesses that don't accept cash at all anymore. But as business correspondent Jolene Kent reports, some say That's unfair.
When Brianne Kimmel gets ready to go in the morning, cash is not in the equation.
I think the last time I went to an ATM was 2 years ago.
She streamlined her wallet to credit cards only. Cash, she feels, is inconvenient and dangerous.
There's a lot of times where I think if I had a lot of cash on me, I'd be a little bit anxious.
While cash is still the number one method of payment, between 2000 and 2015, non-cash payments in the U.S. grew by almost 400%.
Or 338 for you.
Okay. I haven't really needed cash, to be honest. It's either my credit card or if I'm out with friends, I'll use Venmo.
Venmo, the mobile app where people can pay each other on a smartphone, now processes $2 billion a month. This year, Apple added similar payment capabilities in iMessage. These free services are so popular, 30 major banks recently launched a competing product called Zelle. Doing away with paper money has been a big boom for small businesses, too, like the restaurant Sunday in Brooklyn.
The transaction at the table is quicker. Guests are looking for the cleaner, safer, easier transaction. And having a wad of cash in your pocket just isn't convenient.
But 7% of Americans do not have access to banking or credit cards. That adds up to 9 million households that operate with cash only.
When a business says we will not be accepting cash here, it also is saying we will not be accepting people who don't have smartphones here or can't afford them, and people who don't have bank accounts here. You need a line of credit. You need some technology to be able to live in a cashless society. And that leaves out a large portion of our population.
The Brooklyn restaurant says it will not discriminate.
If it did become a concern, I think we would pivot and figure out a solution, maybe take it for select people.
Cashing in on convenience while accepting the cost of change. Jolene Kent, NBC News, San Francisco.
Up next, two well-known structures slated for oblivion. You'll want to see what happened when they flipped the switch. The scene this morning at Clemson University in South Carolina, the end of the line for an iconic campus building. At exactly 8:30, an implosion brought the building down. 150 pounds of dynamite planted on several floors of the old dormitory that began as a hotel in 1950. Officials said the sequence of explosions worked perfectly. Contrast that with what happened in Michigan today, where they had planned to bring down the old Pontiac Silver Dome, former home of the Detroit Lions. Explosives were detonated, as you can see, and then they waited and waited. But there was only that smoke. A demolition official told the Detroit Free Press that some of the explosives failed because of a wiring issue. And if you haven't already noticed, there is a dramatic show in the sky tonight, a supermoon, which occurs when the moon is at its closest point to Earth. And if you miss it, it's the first in what's being called a trilogy. There will be two other supermoons next month. The phenomenon makes the moon appear up to 14% bigger and 30% brighter. And when we come back, we'll meet a man who has saved tens of thousands of objects from the trash heap of history. It looks like a treasure from ancient Egypt, a well-preserved sphinx uncovered in desert sands. Turns out this sphinx was unearthed from the sand dunes of Southern California. It was part of the elaborate Egyptian set constructed in 1923 for director Cecil B. DeMille's silent movie masterpiece, The Ten Commandments. Excavation of the set has turned up a trove of artifacts. And it turns out that one man's trash really is another man's treasure. A man here in New York spent his career proving that point, creating a kind of a trash museum with tens of thousands of found objects. As Harry Smith tells us, it was all in a day's work.
Sanitation workers, theirs is not an enviable task. For among the many things New Yorkers are good at, trash production is near the top of the heap. Nelson Molina spent 34 years on the back of a New York garbage truck and developed an almost mystical sixth sense.
I developed these sensors that I can look at the bag and know there's something in there, or I can hear something when I pick up the bag.
He has amassed a collection of more than 50,000 pieces. Think of him as a sort of Indiana Jones of junk. What others saw as disposable, Molina knew was collectible.
Do you see this stuff as junk?
No.
Yeah.
This is not junk at all. We call this Mongo.
Thank you.
Something that you pick up and you give it a second life, or you give it to somebody. Somebody can use it again instead of just throwing it out.
You got a room full of Mongo.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Mongo is New York Sanitation Department slang for stuff that's been pulled from the trash and then saved or reused. Resurrected, if you will.
Hang on, buddy.
Oh, yeah.
Transistor radios.
Transistor radios, yep.
Oh, my gosh. Look at this. This is how my youth became misspent. This really is a treasure. Mango. Mongo?
Mongo.
Mongo.
Molina's Mongo Museum sits atop a sanitation garage in East Harlem.
This is signed by Lena Horne.
Oh, my gosh.
If you know who to call, another New York thing, you can get a tour.
This is the only one in the five boroughs.
Aisles of memories, piles of things that make us wonder about what we keep and what we throw away.
It's a serious trip to the past. It brings me back to my childhood.
I mean, it's really a time capsule. So many of the objects here tell a story.
Stuff, after all, is only as valuable as the memory we connect it to, which makes Nelson Molina more than a retired garbage man. He is a curator of our culture. Harry Smith, NBC News, New York.
That's a lot of memories. That is NBC Nightly News for this Sunday night. Up next, football night in America. The Seattle Seahawks take on the Philadelphia Eagles. Lester Holt will be back with you tomorrow. I'm Kate Snow. For all of us here at NBC News, have a great night.